2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Alright, welcome to the New Hampshire version of the Tacos Fast 40, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. Check us out at DFSArmy.com today for all of our premium NASCAR content, and content for every other daily fantasy sport there is out there. We're on the brink of another big update to the Domination Station lineup optimizer, but we're still the only lineup optimizer out there in the industry that takes NASCAR dominators into account when making lineups. And once again, that's going to be important here. So definitely come check us out at DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. And this week I will be emphasizing the fast part of Fast 40 for a change. I'm just going to quickly go through the starting lineup front to back for this New Hampshire race, because it's pretty easy to kind of know what all is going on here. Pretty straightforward. Real quick track breakdown. Loudoun is a 1 mile rectangle shaped asphalt track with very flat banking. Not very much banking on the corner, although there is some variable banking. This had always been a one lane race, and like we've seen with a lot of races this year, they're going to be adding a sticky layer to the middle lane and the very, very inside lane, pretty much sandwiched right around the preferred lane. And this move is made to add a little more excitement to the race, and add another viable line to ride around instead of it just being single file for hundreds of laps on end. We saw this at Bristol. Bristol, of course, a much, much smaller track, but it did help shake things up in the field quite a bit. Now, this week there are only 300 laps. It's only 300 miles long. So 300 laps is pretty standard, maybe leaning a little towards the high side of number of laps. So dominators will be important this week, but it is a very short race. And if it weren't for the fact that it is actually 301 miles technically, it would be exactly half the size of the Coke 600 at Charlotte. So this race will go by a lot quicker, real quick stages. And you know, a lot of people say the Coca-Cola 600 is really boring because it's just stretched out too long. This one maybe will make for a little easier to consume viewing for you impatient people out there. But this is pretty much going to play sort of similar to Dover and Phoenix. Those would be the similar tracks, although they're plenty different. Phoenix obviously is shaped a lot differently. Dover, of course, has a lot more banking, so hard to really use certain tracks as corollary tracks here. So for the sample size I collected for the cheat sheet, I pretty much took all of the 1 mile tracks and then the shorter and flatter 1.5 mile intermediate tracks. And I use that as the sample size for the track fit here. It's not as good as, obviously, like weeks where, like last week where we had a 1.5 mile track where there are many of, but you gotta work with what you gotta work with here. So before I dive into the drivers real fast, it's deja vu this week. Now, there weren't any cases where people couldn't get out of tech inspection and onto the track to make a lap time like we saw last week with Larson. But once again, we get to see Mr. Kyle Larson in the very back of the field. And that's going to be huge, of course. We saw the highest ownership that we've ever seen in DFS NASCAR last week with Larson. And that same thing's going to happen again this week. I mean, Larson immediately just jumped to the front of the field, ended up finishing second. You absolutely needed to play him. And it's going to be the same thing here. He He was fastest in the first practice. We do get two practices tomorrow with some 10 lap times. That'll be very interesting to look at. But he was the fastest in practice, and he was also the fastest in qualifying. He had the fastest lap pretty much every stage of the qualifying and won the pole. But he ended up failing the post-qualifying inspection, and his lap won't count, so he will be scored as if starting in 39th. So, once again, a free space Larson. He is a little bit cheaper this week, as he's only 9,700 this week for some reason. I don't know why he would be so cheap, and it's not even really a track history thing. I mean, he has a second and third place finish on his resume. For some reason, they just didn't want to price him properly this week, and it helps because you pretty much have to, once again, either roster him 100% or 80% if you want to play off the DNF percentage, which should be around 20%. Pretty standard week this week. So there really isn't a lot of analysis to be done with Larson. If you have big balls, you could fade him and pray, just knowing the crazy ownership he has. But even if he finishes in last, he's guaranteed at least 5 points this week. And if things get shaken up a little bit, you'll see guys with negative 10, negative 15, negative 30 possibly. But worst that Larson could possibly do is 5 points. And more than likely, he's going to jump up into the like 60 to 80 to 100 point range just based on whether or not he dominates. Because it looks like he's pretty much dead set for a top five finish just with his lightning fast car, which is looking even faster than Martin Truex Jr., which is like the car to beat in NASCAR right now. So those two are pretty much lock and loads. Now, Truex will take over the pole from Larson this week, and after last week's dominating performance where we saw Truex just run away from the field, and with his historical dominance at this track, where he's led on average 45 lead laps per race, a lot of those coming from a few big chunks of domination, including the last race here in the fall. During the chase, he led 141 laps. Truex Jr. has always been pretty good at these one-mile tracks and really all intermediate tracks. He's got the best car outside of maybe Larson, because Larson's cheating, but Truex never has to worry about tech or anything like that. He keeps his nose clean. He's pretty much the safest driver in NASCAR. That's pretty safe to say. You'd think that the sticky layer that they put on the middle to outside lane there would kind of hurt him, since he really likes to ride the inside lane a lot. But they did add a little bit on the very inside lane. I think that's where he's gonna find a lot of his success. Either that or just the preferred lane, unless the VHT lane ends up just being overpowered. Which I think that's my guess as to what's going to happen here, because NASCAR said that on Saturday they were going to add even more of the sticky substance to the track after the Xfinity race. So things are probably going to get shaken up a lot, but I still see a scenario, or I just kind of still see Truex just leading an absolute metric fuck ton of laps here, with tons of lead laps from pretty much lap one until the competition caution. Honestly, he's going to get like every fast lap just off the bat. So Truex, he was about 45% owned last week. Not quite as bad as that excruciating Larson chalk. And it was because he started second. But with him on the pole, I expect him to push that 60% figure. Definitely past 50% ownership. I mean, he's been the car to beat. His stage points this year are just absolutely ridiculous. He has like 11 stage wins, almost 100 more stage points than everyone else. He has 235. Kyle Busch has 168. And the only person really keeping up with him would be Larson with 209. And he has all those second place finishes and wins on the season. But Truex has 3 wins this season. Pretty much the car to beat. He's going to be supremely chalk, and honestly, I think most lineups, most lineups in GPP cash, whatever, certainly in cash, but most lineups that people are going to make are going to start with Truex Jr. and Larson. Like, it's no surprise that those are the two, like, must-own drivers of the week. And maybe you can kind of work around that, but I think, honestly, the plan this week is to just kind of go overweight on it, because it's such a given that Truex is going to dominate just a large chunk and pretty much be a must-play. And Larson, again, unless, like, he blows an engine on the first lap or something, or gets into some sort of trouble, he's going to post like a top 5, top 10, and be another must-play guy. So it's really a four-driver fantasy game this week. So it's even worse than last week, because last week there was at least the whole situation of, hey, who's going to dominate, Kyle Busch or Truex? But pretty freaking obvious he's going to dominate this race, and he could dominate the entire race. That's pretty safe assertion to make right there. I mean, the dude just look the last few intermediate tracks that we've been at. You just look at the 78, no one's catching that thing. I mean, only gets better as the night goes on. Maybe he'll have some trouble in practice, and that might be a reason to get off of him. But I expect to see him top three in every practice, if not leading the next one. So, Truex, obviously, I mean, it would have been more interesting if Larson kept this pole, and then you'd have Larson versus Truex here. But now it's just like you play them both, and it's pretty obviously the way to go. Right next to Truex, we have Jimmy Johnson, who gets to slide up into the front row here. He was extremely low owned last week. He was anywhere between 10 and 13% owned in the GPPs last week. So he's definitely flying under the radar a little bit. I don't think he'll be all that more popular this week with everyone congregating to Truex. And his track history here is not great. He's never led laps ever since 2013 when they made the switch to the Generation 6 car. This hasn't really been a great track of his, but he's like the king of Dover, and that's also a one-mile track. So it goes to show you a bit of the differences in the tracks and how the bankings and such can make a difference. But he's a three-time winner here from years past, but I think you could say that about most tracks with Jimmy Johnson, honestly. I think he makes for definitely someone that you're not going to want to fade. There's a chance that he could dominate, but that's not really his MO. He's just going to stick around till the end or get a pit penalty after the competition caution and just kind of work his way back. That's kind of more of his style. I don't really see him dominating, and I don't think anyone else will. And the same goes for Kenseth McMurray and Kane and Eric Jones right behind Truex, which is why Truex is going to be the elite chalk of all chalk for all the domination points possible. However, there might be a small chance that a Matt Kenseth starting right behind Truex, who has finished top two at this race the last three times, second placed during the chase race here last year, won this race last year, and then the chase race in 2015, he also won that and dominated each time. This is certainly Matt Kenseth's best track. He also won back in 2013 and doesn't have a finish worse than ninth place outside of a 21st place finish in 2014. His track history is certainly the best of anyone here outside of maybe Kyle Busch, because Kyle Busch is also really good here. And I do believe in JGR and these Toyotas this week. I think they are all going to dominate pretty heavily. We've seen the changing of the guards in the last few weeks. I know that JGR does not have a win yet, but certainly coming. And I think any of the JGR drivers could win this week, honestly. But let's be real here. The main JGR driver isn't even on JGR. He's on Furniture Row. And he was supposed to be like the Blaney of the JGR team. But he's pretty much the leader now. And if a guy like Kyle Busch or Matt Kenseth ends up winning this race, I think it's going to be because of Truex making a mistake. That's pretty much how it's going to have to end up here. But I could definitely see Toyota's finishing top five. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Toyota. That is not out of I mean, that's not out of the debate, although I do think that a guy like Jamie McMurray could definitely just stay where he's at in the top five, like he does pretty much every week. But the Toyotas are obviously the cars to beat outside of that Larson cheating machine. But moving along, like I said, Jamie McMurray starting fourth, 8,600. Same song and dance as always. Always qualifies too high to really use. But throughout the race, you're going to be like, man, that McMurray guy is just sitting there in third place all race. I think he ended up being a decent play last week, but same thing as always. I mean, if you look at the positional scoring summary on the cheat sheet, you will see that this is a very, very linear relationship between fantasy scoring and starting position. If you start, basically the higher you start, the more fantasy points you score on average. And there's an overwhelmingly low number of fantasy points scored from anyone starting 30th or worse. But if you start in the top 10, that's where almost all of the elite fantasy scoring comes from. And, like, for example, if you start in the top 10, you average about 39 fantasy points. 11th through 15th would be 32 fantasy points. And after that, it drops down to, like, 26 with 30th and under being 15%, or not 15%, but 15 fantasy points on average. It's a very low-scoring race, so not a whole lot of like time to do a whole lot of like place differential, and people are going to be lapped so soon that not a lot of your scrub guys from the back are going to make it through. Since 2013, guys starting 31st, through 35th have only hit 30 fantasy points 8% of the time, and that's just terrible. And for 36th through 40th starting position, only 10% of the time, and they've never hit the 40 point mark. So this is a terrible week to punt. So guys like Jamie McMurray might actually end up all right, but he is very expensive. He's 8,600. I mean, he's no longer a guy that you're seeing in the 7,000s like we've always been used to with Jamie McMurray. He's got a great car. He's just not a dominator. He's just going to stay in the top five and end up being like, okay. Like, if he would just qualify a little bit lower, he'd make for a cash play pretty much every week. But starting fourth, I just don't play him and hope something happens to him. Another guy you won't want to play this week is Casey Kane, who'll be starting fifth. That's just an instant fade. Erik Jones starting sixth. Not so much of an instant fade, since he is on Furniture Row Racing, which is really, really, really good. Obviously, as you know, Truex is going to be dominating this race or not. We've seen Jones do really well. Last week he qualified a little too high, but still ended up being an awesome play because he moved up within the top 10. And we could definitely see a top 5 finish out of him. But we don't know a whole lot about what he's going to do here. He's never raced this track before in the Monster Energy Cup Series. But he was top 10 in the first practice, and he always practices really well. If you see him post like top 2, top 3 practice times, then he becomes a play even starting 6th. But if it stays middling and he practices around the teens or so, I'd say that warrants a fade. Pretty hard, especially since he'll pretty much immediately get passed by the JGR guys behind him. And we will start those guys off with Kyle Busch starting 7th. I feel like he would be a popular play, but I don't think his ownership is going to break 30% this week. And it's because it's really just because Martin Truex Jr. and Kyle Larson are just mandatory this week. Now, I do think the most popular three-stud combination this week will be Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., and Kyle Larson, because Kyle Busch is very good at this track. 4 top 3 finishes in his last 8 races. Won this race back in 2015, and last time out he finished 3rd in the Chase race last year. An average driver rating of 121, which is even better than Matt Kenseth's in the sample. Averages about 50 lead laps and 28 fast laps, which is the second most of anyone in the field in that regard. So he gets a lot of fast laps here, and he gets a lot of fast lap week to week. And he pretty much always finds a way to the front. He's a really, he's probably the top candidate to lead laps outside of Martin Truex Jr. That's pretty much a given. Maybe you could argue that Larson's there because, you know, he's going to work his way up so fast and he's got the best car. But Kyle Busch definitely has the third best car. I think those guys, 1, 2, 3, are pretty much everyone would agree that those are the three best cars on the track. So know that if you make a lineup that starts Larson, Kyle Busch, and Truex, that you will need to leave some salary off the table, or you're going to tie with like 80 people this week, because believe me, if you max out your salary and play those three guys, that's just asking to tie with a bunch of people. And of course, that's what's going to win the $8, of course. Unless we get another solo first, that'd be great, guys. Come on, let's bring another one of those home. But more than likely, it's going to be one of these, you know, 50-person ties up front. And that's just because of the way this week is. And it's just super obvious who you should play. And honestly, Kyle Busch is one of those guys. He is the most expensive guy on the board, of course. But starting 7th, you know he's probably going to finish top 3. He could win here. He's won here several times in the past, and his odds to win are actually better than Martin Truex Jr.'s. At least pre-qualifying odds put him at 4.25 to Martin Truex Jr.'s 4.5. So he's actually the odds-on favorite to win here. So at a drastically reduced ownership compared to guys like Truex. Might be worth a fade just in case somehow he ends up like dominating and Truex falls back a little or gets into trouble. That'd probably be my if I was to make a Truex free lineup, that would be the way I'd go, either him or go with Kenseth or Jimmy Johnson. But Kyle Busch probably the second best dominator option on the board, and right behind him is a guy who I think is going to be very sneaky this week. No one's going to own him, Denny Hamlin, who it looks really good in the odds. He's 6-1, as for guys like Jimmy Johnson are 8-1 and Kenseth is 9-1. He's sitting there at 6-1 for some reason, and he's not been overwhelmingly good here, but he has started to look a lot better over the last few weeks. Led a bunch of laps last week, he didn't like dominate the race or anything, but we've seen him just come out into the front. I think he was about to lead a bunch of laps, but then ended up going into a caution or something. But he's been in position to dominate. If he ends up dominating and you own him, he's not going to break 15% ownership, if not 10% ownership. Like I think around 12% is what you'll see Denny Hamlin at, and that's very low. And he's a really high upside here. And starting 8th, it's not even that bad if he just finishes top 5, which I think he could definitely do. I'm just all over JGR this week. Really am feeling them, guys. And Hamlin's one of the guys that I'm going to appreciate because of the low ownership. And also, he's just in this 5 through 10 starting position, which actually is the best place to start if you're looking at average fantasy points scored based on starting position. Moving right along down the top 10 here, starting in 9th, Kurt Busch. Not that interesting of a play, of course. He doesn't dominate ever. he also doesn't put up any fast laps, and that's pretty much the reason I fade him basically every week outside of road courses, and I'm gonna just keep doing that. He will be super low owned. Maybe own a share or two of him just in case, but he's gonna be low owned for a reason. And right behind him, Brad Keselowski, starting 10th. Feels like Penske just hasn't been there recently. At tracks that you would expect Keselowski to do good at, like at Kentucky. Actually, that's a terrible example. Cause Kentucky, he just crashed out early. But early on, the race wasn't looking good. Looked like he did not have a dominating car at all. He had that car in the first half of the season, or the first half of the first half of the season, because right now we're about right around the halfway point. But Brad had the car. He's had weeks where he's had the best car in the field. Hasn't had one of those weeks in a while, and I don't think this is one of those weeks. 19th fastest in first practice. Again, keep track of, you know, practice times and all that, but I don't think Keselowski is that intriguing of a play for me this week. And honestly, it's the same thing with Chase Elliott starting 11th. Gonna be low owned. It's just the same thing as Keselowski. He hasn't been getting in quite as much trouble. He's just been like, you know, just under the radar. He hasn't been dominating like he did early on the season and last year. No domination from him whatsoever. He just kind of chills like in the teens until the end of the race where he sneaks up into like the top five or whatever. But pretty much the same thing with him here. And I don't know, without the dominator upside, I don't want to spend $9,100 for that and have to drop a guy like Kyle Busch or Kevin Harvick or whatever. So that's why I'm not really on my boy Chase. I wish I could be. 13-1 odds, just not good compared to guys a little bit cheaper than him that are in a much better position to do some fantasy scoring, like Clint Bowyer. They're at that price range, or even Logano. But you know, if you want to be contrarian, Chase Elliott's going to be like in the low teens in ownership and all that, right around 10% maybe. So that could be an option, but you know, if I'm not on Elliott, then no one's on Elliott, because I try to go out of my way to roster him a little bit just this week, just not really feeling it until he proves he can, you know, dominate again. He just hasn't had that dominating car really. Hendricks hasn't put out those cars, not even for Jimmy. So staying away from Elliott a little bit here. Kevin Harvick is going to be a popular play, starting 12th. Probably the lowest starting stud outside of Logano right behind him, but Harvick has a really good track history here. He's the returning champion, although he didn't dominate last race, honestly. He just kind of like snuck in right at the very end, led like 10 laps, won the race, and it's like, ooh, but he has dominated races here in the past. He's finished top 4 in 4 of his last 5 races here, and averages 50 lead laps per race, which is very good, right there with Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. So all about the Harvick play. If you're going to match some with Truex Jr. or Larson, it's either going to be Kyle Busch or Harvick. That is certainly like the elite second tier of driver that you're looking for this week, outside of the obvious and Larson and Truex Jr. Right behind him is Joey Logano, who, like Keselowski, his teammate, has been struggling. But this is a track that he considers his home track. Loves this track a lot. He's from Connecticut. This is in New Hampshire. So, got the whole New England thing going on. Won back in 2014, the fall race there, and followed that up with a 4th and 2 3rd place finishes, finishing 11th last year. He really seems to have taken a step back this year. He's not like that top 3 driver he was during last season and arguably the season before, where he really should have won a championship. But taking a step back. I know he looked good at Daytona, but that's Daytona. Still waiting to see if Penske can kind of turn it around. Looks like the only Penske guy you've wanted recently has been Ryan Blaney. So Logano, he's getting cheaper, $8,800, finally out of the $9,000 range. Starting 13th, I could see him sliding into the top 5, so I'm going to be using him, just not liberally. I think he's one of these drivers like Dale Earnhardt Jr. that people are just kind of tired of or really wary of, so I don't think his ownership would get that crazy, even though his price is low and he's got a good starting position compared to the rest of the chalk, outside of Larson, obviously. So Logano is a play I'm going to use, but probably just a little bit underweight to the field, because still just kind of waiting it out with him. His odds to win have dropped to like 11-1, where we'd always see him in the 5-6-7 range before. So something's up with them. Maybe we'll see them do better in practice, but in first practice he was only 17th fast, and Penske really has been practicing fast or just putting out fast cars recently, so not too much Logano for me. Daniel Suarez at 7,500, he's starting 14th, and he's gotten very popular in recent weeks. Like, people are kind of over-rostering him, and he's been qualifying high, but people have still been picking him. And 14th might be considered low for him. He seems to be almost as good as his JGR counterparts nowadays. He's started to really, really work his way upfield. You'll see him in like the top two or three or four. And maybe that breakout win could be coming for him. Maybe he'll be the first JGR guy to win this year. But compared to his teammates, he's a hell of a lot cheaper. He's only 7,500. Starting back in 14th. Won't be the highest owned. Won't like break 20%, I'd guess, but he's still going to be more popular. He's not going to be like, he's not going to be your super sneaky play, but I do like him as a very solid play. Someone in the top 15, I really do see staying in the top 15 all race and possibly posting a top 10, if not a top 5 finish. So he's going to be one of my good value plays. That's not going to be like super chalky. And right underneath him is Ryan Blaney at 8,300, which is definitely the cheapest that we've seen him in a long time. Statistically, he's very good at these types of track, although I know that the sample that we whipped up this week isn't the greatest, since it's hard to really, you know, come up with corollary tracks for New Hampshire and all that, but Blaney had been very, very good at the 1.5 mile intermediate tracks this year, and also really good at some of the 1 miles. So you know, I know that Penske is struggling, but it hasn't looked like the Wood brothers have been. Maybe in the last few races he hasn't been like crazy good, but I mean, he almost won back in Texas and back in Kansas. He's had some dominating performances. He has that in him. And starting 15th, I definitely see him working his way into the top 5 or 10 some point during the race. And at 8,300, that's the cheapest we've gotten Blaney in a long time. I think I'll make him a bit popular. He'll break that 20% ownership number, probably, certainly. I think he's going to be a popular option. Even though roster construction kind of suggests that he's going to be hard to roster unless you forego a guy like Kyle Busch and have him as your third most expensive guy, and then throw like three $7,000 guys to go along with the two chalk guys. That might be the way that people get Ryan Blaney in, but he was third fastest in first practice. And we'll see as the practices come in, of course, but I think that Blaney could be in a really good spot this week, and I like him a lot. Now, right underneath Blaney is Matt DiBenedetto. He put up one hell of a qualifying. Qualified 16th. So, yeah, instant fade. Don't even think about playing him. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. will be starting 17th, and that's a play I've started to really, really like. In years past, Stenhouse had always been better at these intermediate tracks, but he's gotten his wins at plate tracks, and I thought last week that people might kind of be aware of that, but what I saw with ownership last week is that people are really game-logging, like, really hard. Like the field rostered David Reagan, like, overwhelmingly, even though he had qualified, like, 26th and was a bad play. He was owned about 24% just because they looked at his game logs and saw that he had finished like 4th and 8th at his last two races. But those last two races were Sonoma, a road course, and Daytona, a plate track, which nothing like an intermediate track. So I think that's a reason that people are going to be all over Stenhouse because he's gotten those wins. He's been very, very good when he hasn't been crashing recently. So I'm probably just going to try to match the field or maybe go a little bit overweight on the field. It's just I'm not being too sneaky. I know that everyone knows that Ricky Stenhouse has been really good recently when he's stayed the course and his fiance hasn't ran into him like what happened at Sonoma. But I don't know. I don't think he's not going to be like crazy chalk or anything. There are some guys down further in the 20s that people kind of flock to a little more, but Stenhouse would be popular because he's just underpriced. And right beneath him, Dale Earnhardt Jr., he's also a bit underpriced at 8,000. Although you could argue that that's fair. It just feels underpriced based on what we had been getting him for. But 8,000, he's very good at New Hampshire, honestly. He hasn't raced here recently because he missed both races last year with a concussion. But he's usually a top 10 guy here. And I think people are like, at this point, people have to be like 100% skittish about Dale Jr. because it still just seems like every race something bad happens to this guy. Or he just doesn't put his whole heart into it. He's kind of driving around scared a little bit, you know. Things we've been saying for the last several weeks and months with Dale Earnhardt Jr. Just kind of the same case again, but starting 18th, he actually is in a really good spot this week. So if you want to go there, you can go there. I just don't think a lot of people are going to go there. So if I was more into Hendricks this week, I would probably consider using a good amount of Dale Jr. starting 18th. I just don't think that he has any sort of real upside outside of like a, I don't know, like maybe an 8th place finish, 7th place finish. That seems about right. It's just not going to like win you a GPP. I don't think he's going to be on any optimal lineups. But if he is, he'll be very low owned, so who knows. I'm more interested in the guy behind him, Clint Bowyer, starting 19th at $8,700. He's still a little bit expensive, and I know his track history here is to be desired. Last four races here, he's pretty much been crap, but before that, he was actually very good. Driver of this course, he's really good at all the flat tracks, I would say, and he's looked just a lot better this year. He's gotten his fair share of top threes. He hasn't dominated anything yet, but when you start 19th, you don't really need to dominate. You just need to finish top 10, and I think Bowyer can certainly do that. So at 8,700, still a little pricey. Not going to be like a super core play for me or anything, and I do think that he's going to garner some fair ownership, maybe pushing around the 30% owned range, because 19th is a really juicy starting spot for Clint Bowyer. He's pretty much a top 10 lock week to week, but you know, again, it's like I had said earlier with guys like Blaney or Chase Elliott, where it's like you're gonna have to fade a Kyle Busch or a Kevin Harvick to get him in there, and that's going to be tough. But he does allow for you to have more of your upper 7K kind of punts, is where the roster construction of just using the chalky guys are going to lead you to go down more into the 6K range. So if you're wanting to get some of the lower-owned 7K punt guys, that might be a way to do it there by going Bowyer as your third guy. Once again, Michael McDowell qualified too high, started 20th. It's a shame. He might stick around for a little while, but I'm not buying that. Eric Almirola is back. Glad to see him back in the 43. Richard Petty, Motorsports Ford. But he's only 6,600. I don't know if his pricing is really affected by Bubba. Seems like he's just kind of where he left off, but we'd seen Bubba just do amazingly. Like, he was pushing top 10s like week after week, and I'm sure that we're going to see Bubba later in the season, but or with another team, but Almirola seems to be back. I wouldn't go too crazy on him, but I do like him this week. I think he's going to be very low owned, under 10%, and because people are going to have their concerns about him. And starting 21st, not that great, but this is a track where he's posted several top 20, top 10 finishes. In 2014, he finished 6th, and in 2013, at this race, he finished 5th. So Almirola is a contrarian pivot sort of value play down the 6K range, and that's going to be valuable this week. No interest in Chris Buescher starting 22nd. That's too high. And honestly, AJ Allmendinger starting 23rd at a track that he's not too great at, and a track type that he's not too great at, also not very interesting for me. But he will be low owned, and you know, I prefer him over Buescher because I do think that he actually has the potential to move up, as where Buescher pretty much would be lucky to stay where he's at. A very popular play this week and a very popular play last week, who's pretty much in the same position, just a few spots higher, would be Ryan Newman, starting 24th. This is probably Ryan Newman's best track of any track. He's won here three times. He's won the pole at this track seven times in 30 races. And he's finished in the top 10 in 20 of 30 races in his career. So he is excellent at Loudon, New Hampshire. Just awesome at this track. Starting 24th, he's going to once again be the chalk. He was about 33% owned last week, starting 29th. So this week, starting 24th, I don't know how much people really look at track history and how that affects ownership percentage. I know it does, but it seems like last week people weren't really buying ownership, or the ownership wasn't really coming from track history. It was coming more from practice times and just starting position. And Ryan Newman was pretty much the guy last week. I think he's going to be one of the guys this week, but not the guy in the value range. But at 7,300, still just very cheap. Probably my favorite value play of anyone 8K or under. He's just going to be a little more popular than I'd like. Ty Dillon at 6,700. He is starting 25th. I heard on PRN earlier today before qualifying that he was just outwardly expressing his concerns with his speed. He said that he wishes that he had more speed, but he was talking about something that he's going to have to work with his team on the rest of the season. But him and his brother have not looked good at all this week. Their teammate Ryan Newman has, but the Dillons just are struggling in a mighty way. Ty Dillon was the 33rd fastest in first practice, which is just terrible. With Austin, who was starting 26th, he was 29th fastest, so something's up with RCR there. Newman was fine, but everyone else in the RCR camp, a little bit concerned about just some very slow practice times. We'll have to see if that turns around today during practice. But Austin Dillon's the more interesting play here, certainly. He'll be a lot higher owned. Starting 26th is pretty low for him, and he has a great history here. Never finished worse than 22nd, and finished 8th back in 2015. What does he have, like, he has 5 out of 6 times that he's raced here, he's finished 16th or better. So a very solid history here, and starting 26th, just pretty rock solid value. Just, we're going to need to see those practice times go up a little bit. I think they'll figure it out. They've got a few practices to figure it out and all that, so I'm probably going to be buying him. Just know that going forward. Just, you know, look at the practice time for all these guys, of course. It's simple as that with three practices and some 10 lap times. We're really going to go off of these practice times, so check that in the domination station and everything. Another play I really like that I liked last week but completely burned me, crashing into a guy with a last name that rhymes with his, and that would be Trevor Bayne, who ran to Kane and brought the pain. The reason I had a really crappy Kentucky last week. But Trevor Bayne, starting 27th, burned anyone that used him last week, and he was very low owned. I think that's going to continue again. He's just not as popular as his teammate Stenhouse. But starting 27th, only $6,900. That's great. He's one of my favorite plays of the week. I don't really care. Probably the best play for me outside of Ryan Newman, in my opinion. So, love Bayne. He crashed last time out this track. He has a 16th place finish back in 2015, but he's only raced here 4 times. And I don't know, I just think that Roush has been really good this year with Bayne and Stenhouse, and I'm buying them all over the place when they're not qualifying like top 10 like they had been. And right underneath Bayne would be Landon Castle, starting 28th, a little bit too high for him. No one's really going to use him. There's no real reason to use him, because for $100 more and get a much better play. Paul Menard, again, another RCR guy. He was starting 29th, which is intriguing because his track history here is, like, all right. Like, all right. Not, like, great, but it's all right. He hasn't finished worse than 25th since 2013. He's starting 29th, so if you just kind of assume he gets, like, a 20th place finish, he'll be all right at starting 29th, and he's not going to be high-owned at all. He's never high-owned. He's Paul Menard. So something to consider there, for sure. Has pretty good Vegas odds compared to everyone else in this, like, price range. So Menard going to be a popular, well, not a popular play because of the lady starting behind him in this price range. But he's going to be a popular play for me. I think I'm going to go overweight to the field. I probably put about 20 to 25% Menard, since I guess that he'll be between 10 and 15% owned in the field. I think he's in a really good spot here. I just want to see those practice times go up. And Danica Patrick is finally a play. She really hasn't had these like bad qualifyings so far this year. You usually see her in the upper 20s, but she'll be starting 30th. And this is a track where she's finished 18th and 14th in her last two times out. And outside of a couple of crashes, she really doesn't finish worse than, like, 25th. And that's really all you're asking for a $6,200 driver starting 30th. And she'll garner some ownership, definitely, because she's right in that price range where guys who play Larson, or guys who play Truex and the Kyles will have to flock to this little range. So she's going to get popular. But I think she's definitely someone worth a little over-owning a bit, because she has an ownership percentage that is capped because there's just this hard belief that she crashes all the time. But if you look at all of her crashes, honest to goodness, she gets ran into a ton. And the crashes she causes she does not cause crashes very often at all compared to, like, your average driver. She's just very unlucky. And that's not really, you know, it's not statistically sound to worry about anything like that. So Patrick, good play. I don't care about any of that. She's probably not going to crash, but if she does, you know, I'll eat my words there, but it's whatever. We have the return of Corey LaJoie this week. He's $4,700 and he's starting 31st. If you really need to punt down there, he's probably my favorite place to go, because anyone like 33rd or under besides Larson I really don't like at all. Like, the worst of the worst ended up qualifying worst, you know. So you can go LaJoie if you want. He's probably got the best car out of all these $4,000 scrubs, but he is starting 31st and will probably finish right there. He has raced here. He raced here back in 2014. He finished 41st, like, had a pretty early DNF, so I don't know if that really counts as experience, but someone who does have a lot of experience here and will pragmatically be probably my highest owned value play is David Raken at $5,500. He is starting 32nd. Now, I don't know how highly owned he'll be. Right now I have him pegged around 20 to 25%. Last week we saw him at 24% ownership starting 26th. He's starting 32nd now. Now, he didn't do well last week, obviously, and I don't think he's going to do that great this week, but he could easily move into the top 25, and I just like the fact that he's $5,500. I need someone at this price range, and outside of Reagan, there is no one. Really, below Patrick, the only person you can use is Reagan. So, just pragmatically, I'm going to have to use him a lot and hope he pulls off a good finish, because he probably burned a lot of people last week. And if you really want to, if you really need to pick someone else, for some reason, Cole Witt is more expensive than David Reagan, which doesn't make any sense. But he's starting one spot back in 33rd, and maybe he could be that really low-owned guy that helps you a bit. And he's going to be much lower-owned than Reagan, so that might be a pivot reasoning right there. I just don't see anything coming out of Cole Witt. And David Reagan is historically a guy that's been very good at flat tracks. Witt's been okay. Like, he has a 24th place finish here in 2015, but not nearly as good as Reagan in his career, although Reagan has had better equipment over the span of his career. But, I mean, once you get past Reagan and Witt right there, that's pretty much it, because Galding fade, Sorensen fade, Earnhardt fade, Sieg fade, and Billicke fade. All five of those guys are completely useless, and you should not roster them. And underneath all of them, of course, is Kyle Larson, who you should probably put in every single lineup this week. So that will conclude Taco's Fast 40. Tried to keep it in under an hour, and I think I actually succeeded. So you're welcome for that. And that'll pretty much do it. I mean, if you're looking at an overall strategy this week, I'd say, I guess just don't get cute. Play a whole bunch of Truex, play a whole bunch of Larson, and leave some salary on the table and try to just be different with the rest of your plays. And don't be stupid. Just don't roster like Kasey Kahne. Let that be like free money coming your way. You know, don't roster Matt DiBenedetto. Don't roster Eric Jones unless he's qualifying like crazy. You know, just plays like that that's gonna be what gives you the edge for the most for the most part. Then just pick a few like pivot contrarian sort of $6,000 value guys to go with the chalk up top, and I think that's going to be the path to victory here in a week where there's going to be just a ton of chalk. So keep that in mind, and I will see you guys next week for Taco's Fast 40. Remember to check out dfsarmy.com, and if you choose to sign up and come check out our Slack chat channel and all of our premium content, remember to use promo code TACO for a lifetime 20% off, and it supports the pod. We thank you very much for listening, and we will see you guys next week. Later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.